Today's show is brought to you by a blowout win by the Utah Jazz, Chris.
They're on a roll. They're rocking and rolling. They can't stop making at least 20 threes in a game.
NBA record.
They tried to do it in the first half last night. They were scorching
let's
hot.
Let's call it an NBA record. How about it?
Yeah, let's just call it an NBA record. Why not?
Let's just call it an NBA record. I think we can beat the Lakers. We proved that last night.
We've proven it.
Give us seven games to the Lakers, even at full health, we'll sweep them.
At this point, seven games you don't even need. Why would you even need seven games?
Let's just play horse and we'll win. That's how I feel.
That's the one area I do think the Jazz are a little weak. As we've said many times in this podcast, you witnessed George Niang play horse against a bunch of Zions bank tellers. And he did not win. So if it comes down to that, they might not do so well. But
it was elimination, but same type of thing. I'm not sure how good we are.
If it's 5-on-5 basketball, they're fine.
Yeah, 5-on-5? You're going to tell me we can't beat people 5-on-5?
Don't talk about this too much. I got some thoughts here in the sports segment.
Best record in the league. Blowout win. Now, in all honesty, we got to be honest. Lakers did not have Anthony Davis.
Or Dennis Schroeder. Their second or third
Dennis
best player.
Or Dennis Schroeder. Which is weird that Dennis Schroeder would matter.
But it's fine to be happy about the win.
No, I am.
Okay. You got a little down there. You go,
you think I got depressed?
Listen, I want to be honest. I'm okay. Emotionally, we're going
great.
Down a spiral.
I don't care. I don't want Anthony Davis to come back this season.
Yeah, you've been very clear about that.
I'm sad that Anthony Davis has a hurt elbow. Who cares?
Most fans, they do the politically correct thing where they go, listen, it sucks Anthony Davis is out. You've been going the other way. You go, I can't have him back.
Why have him back? Oh, the league's fun or the competition. No, shut up.
If every
the
NBA
Utah Jazz
team,
need to win an NBA championship.
If every NBA team could be fielded by Zions Bank tellers right now, except for the Jazz, you would take that.
Of course I would.
And that'd be entertaining, actually.
I will do anything for the first championship. And that includes suiting up if I have to. If I have to suit up, I will.
You rally four tellers. Come on! Let's do this.
All right. And now, let's beehive. Looking alive on a Thursday. Boys of Thursday, boy, are you alive? My name is Clippett.
My name is Chris Roll.
A lot of things going on in the world, Chris. You know, as you look around the world, when you get up every morning and you look out to the world, you sit on your porch, you got a nice cup of coffee. The sun's coming
down. No, I never do most.
Or the sun's coming up on the world, and you look out there, you're like, man, there's got to be a lot going on.
Every morning I wake up, I open the window and I do that. I go, what is going on in the world? And then I go, I don't really need to just theorize about it. I'm going on to a show in, you know, an hour. Mm-hmm. And I'll learn from Clint what's going on. The Jazz won last night, apparently in a blowout. Mm-hmm. I'm going to learn about the goings-on in Utah, and then I go from there.
Do you ever pull a Snow White?
Yeah.
And open your window and start singing, and animals come in?
No, I do open my window and try to get animals to come in. I go, hey there, squirrel.
Yeah.
I got an extra cup of coffee here. If you just want to come hang out, you know, make a new friend. The animals do not respond as favorably to me as they do to Snow White, but that's more on me. That's not on the animals.
Like, excuse me. We live in Utah. We're Mormon.
Red Robin.
We got hot cocoa.
Excuse me, Red Robin. If I could intrude real fast, I know you're in the middle of this little worm session, but I could sure use a friend in this early morning dawn.
There's a lot going on. Our viewers and listeners, well, listeners, they wouldn't have seen it. Only the viewers, those who are viewing this, would have seen a guitar to my right.
Yes.
There is a guitar on the couch.
A great looking guitar, a guitar that I played before the show. And I can assess that it also has playability.
I call it Black Beauty. I don't know what you call it.
You have always called it Black Beauty.
I call it Black Beauty. That's a kind of my name for it. We'll see what the actual name for it is here in a second. We're talking to Robert Rask from Rask Guitars here in a second.
Yes, we are.
How are you excited about that?
I'm actually.
You're a guy who likes to play guitar, but I'll say it's boring as hell when you do it. I like somebody who will strum it hard, who will really sing loud when they're doing it, and like it just takes up the whole room.
Well, I'm a little bit nervous for two reasons. One, Robert's right here. He's sitting and watching us from afar. I was talking to him a little bit before the show.
I don't think you're supposed
to say that, but. And, well, yeah, of course you can say. You can say anything you want. It's the early morning.
The guitar's to my right. Robert's to my left.
The main reason that I'm nervous is when Robert comes on, because I'm the person who plays guitar and you don't, I have to kind of posit myself of as an expert on the show, which I was saying before the show. I'm like, look, I play guitar, but like I couldn't really tell you anything about what it sounds like and how you build it and all that kind of stuff. So I'm a little bit nervous that I'm going to, you know, get swallowed up by his knowledge and I'm going to look like the idiot. And you're going to be over there going, yeah, I don't play guitar, but yeah, oh, I'm learning a lot of good stuff.
I'm more of a George Strait myself. I like to just sing and look good for the ladies. And I rarely play. I'll just kind of, I'll hold one for sure.
I can assure you my guitar playing has never gotten me a woman. It sucks, dude.
Yeah. You didn't need to assure me. I knew. How could it?
Maybe my problem is I've been playing the wrong guitar, and when Robert comes out here and I go, ooh, that Ras guitar, that sounds nice, it looks nice, maybe that's the sidekick that I need to truly woo the opposite sex. Maybe I'm doing it all wrong. Maybe the Ras is what I need.
Yeah, you're like, is that a Ras?
Like, is that a Ras? What's your name there? I go, I'm
you're
Chris
dang
Rall.
Right it is, baby.
I'm Chris Rall, and I'm single.
You're dang
and they
right
go,
it is.
When I hear it like that, even the Ras can't save you, bud.
want me to play some Body is a Wonderland real quick? Excited about that? All right, so we're going to talk to Robert Ras from Ras Guitars here in a moment. But the first thing we got to do is figure out what's going on today in the Beehive. So here's today in the Beehive. All right. So according to a new report released by Wallet Hub.
Reputable organization.
Do you realize, immediately I'm going to go out and get off track. Do you realize that local news outlets cite Wallet Hub all the time?
That doesn't offend
for
me.
For studies that matter. And all that is like a content marketing strategy on their part. We're like, let's put out some sweet, crazy study that's going to get more views to Wallet Hub so that they can sell Wallet Hub.
Well, I have the opinion that no study really matters. Yeah. So when you acknowledge that, you can cite a study from any source. You could cite a study from you or me or Wallet Hub, and it's all the same thing. Mm-hmm. So when the local news does that, no, it doesn't offend me at all. And in fact, I kind of like it, you know? I'm excited to hear what Wallet Hub has to say.
Well, I'm glad, because what they've come out with is Utah is the fourth least sinful state in the union.
In the union. Okay, I got a lot of questions about just that line. The union? What's this? Another split?
No, it's the whole country.
Why do they call it the union?
They've always called it the union.
That's just Wallet Hub. Okay, now I got a problem with Wallet Hub. We've moved past ancient times. We refer to ourselves as a country, you know, a unified country. It's not a union anymore. However, the study itself, the fourth least sinful or most sinful?
We're certainly not most.
Well, we gotta.
Our Red Robins don't even drink coffee. We're the most.
If they're factoring in animal behavior, we would be the least sinful state. Dude, our animals are so in point in this. Bear one time walked into my backyard and I had some food lying out there. It goes, this isn't my food. I'm gonna leave. I'm not even gonna steal. I'm not even gonna look at it.
This is not
And
mine.
I see this from the window and I go, I come out there. I go, dude, you can, you know, this is trash. You can have whatever you want. This is just gonna go in the garbage. And they go, as long as you're okay with it, that's fine. I just didn't want to take it without the owner's consent. That's what kind of animals we have in the state.
They're good.
They're just kind. They're moral beings.
Salt Lake City is the 78th most sinful city, and West Valley City is the 168th out of 182 of the most populated cities in the country.
So those are the most sinful?
What are you? It's 78th
most. I keep mishearing what you're saying.
78th most sinful. That's way down the list. 78? There's 77 cities above them.
I don't think that that's way down the list, you know?
How many cities do you think there are?
If I was ranked the 77th best tennis player in the United States of America, I'd be a great tennis player, you know? If I was the 77th most sinful bear in the union, according to Wallet Hub, I'd be a very sinful bear.
Yeah.
So I hear that and I go, Salt Lake City, maybe there's something that needs to change up there, you know? 77th most sinful. That's top 100. People hear a top 100, they go, wow, great job. You're in the top 100. They don't look at that as like, oh, you're way down the list.
Yeah, I don't know.
You might because
I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay.
However, when you combine the percentages of all the states based on the sins of choice for the study, Utah as a whole is the fourth least sinful state in the union. Only Vermont, Idaho, and Wyoming are less sinful.
I would not have guessed that. Vermont! So my brother and sister-in-law and their family, they live right by Vermont.
Are
actually,
they
maybe they live in Vermont.
Are they socialists?
I don't know what that means. So yeah, sure. I don't know. I don't know. I have no idea. People bandy that word about, and I still don't know what it means. They live there, and I hear it's a little more sinful than you'd think. That's the word on the street.
Well, a caveat on Vermont.
Caveat.
A caveat.
Yeah.
The state that gives us Senator Bernie Sanders is also in the top 10 for the sin of greed.
How do they determine that?
Why do you care?
Because I like to know the parameters
it's
of
Wallet
a study.
Hub. You think this is a Harvard study? This is Wallet Hub.
Well, I think Wallet Hub and Harvard.
A Google Typeform is how they determine it.
You act like Harvard's not typeforming. You act like Harvard is, we actually do know who is sinning more and who is sinning less. Harvard does the same thing. Harvard calls up 10 people in Vermont, my brother and sister-in-law included, mm-hmm. and goes, are you greedy? And they go, well, what do you mean by greedy? They go, do you wish you had more money in your life? They go, sure, anybody does. They go, Vermont's greedy as hell.
Top 10.
The top 10 greedy state.
Top 10 and
then
greedy.
They call up Utah, you know, they call up somebody like me, a man who's not worldly. They go, do you wish you had more money? I go, money? What's money? What's money to a man like me? I got bears rooting around my yard. What are you talking about? Get off the phone.
So this was written by Janelle Pugmire in the Daily Herald. And this is where this article gets incredible. I know it's been incredible so far and you've enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. But it's about to get insane. So back here, I'm going to read it. Back in Utah, with the most predominant religion being the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, its members may not be so surprised about the status of sinfulness for some of the state's cities in the Wallet Hub study.
This is great. This is good. Continue.
This sinfulness was prophesied 156 years ago by President Heber C. Kimball, first counselor in the first presidency of the church at the time.
That's sweet.
This is what President Kimball said back then, 156 years ago. Are you ready for this?
Yes, fire.
I do not say but that you are just as good men and women in this place as in any other place in the mountains. Yea, I admit that the people are better in the country towns than in Great Salt Lake City, for the froth and scum of hell seem to concentrate there, and those who live in the city have come in contact with it. And with persons who mingle with robbers and liars and thieves and with whores and whore masters, etc.
Poor Salt Lake, dude.
Such wicked men will also introduce themselves into Davis County.
Davis? Why are they getting steamrolled? What did they do? And, I've been to Davis County. It's just a bunch of normal folks.
And among all the settlements throughout these mountains, but where the people are truly righteous and just, wicked men can do them no harm. Were the people all righteous who profess to be Latter-day Saints, they would constantly be on their watch against the encroachment of a wicked power.
That's some Daily Herald reporting right there, first of all.
That's second unbelievable.
Of all, I don't hate the idea that if you go into the mountains, you're more at peace with the state of the world. And then when you go to the city, you're less at peace. I do agree with that. Whenever I'm in the mountains, I don't have a care in the world. I just go, oh, man, nature's sweet.
Man, these bears are so nice.
I'm not going to worry about all of this greed or whatever else is going on in Davis County. And then when I go back to the city, you know, I'm afflicted with all these worldly things. Like, I'm froth. What's the froth in
you're
the
frothing.
Scum of hell? What was
you're
that?
Frothing. You're frothing at the mouth
that?
Right now.
What's the froth?
Utah County wasn't mentioned, but it appears the uptick in apparent sinning is migrating south with population growth.
I can attest to that as a man who lives in South Utah County. Look.
You've seen
Spanish
it.
Fork, our hometown, great place to be, okay? We used to just, it was chill. You know, people went about their day. They didn't steal. They didn't lie. They did their things. Then Costco came to town. People started buying in the memberships. They're going, I got to pay $80 a year. No. It sounds like a lot, but you make it up more than that for the gas alone, okay? And I go, okay, we're getting a little too caught up in this money stuff. Maybe it's something to keep an eye about. And so then the next thing I know, what's popping up? All these big food establishments. Oh, what's that over there? That's an Olive Garden. Which I go, okay, Olive Garden, it sounds cool. There's nice pasta, that kind of stuff. What happens? Hepatitis outbreak immediately. Mm. affliction of the world.
They got that figured out. Let's not slander them.
You think they got it figured out.
They're doing fine. It's a fine establishment. Now, is Olive Garden the best restaurant in Spanish Fork? No, that belongs to Chili's. That's where my depravity came out. When I thought there was a Chili's, I was like, this is it. This is the end.
I know, because Chili's now, so Chili's combines with DoorDash. So now you don't even have to dress up in your fancy attire and go out to eat. You don't got to dress at all. You just sit there at home naked. You go, yeah, I'll take 3 extra appetizers and 2 meals and a lava cake to boot. And they deliver it right to your house. What's that? It's the, I can't remember what the biblical sin is, but the person who eats too much.
Glutton.
There you go. So now gluttony's been introduced to this formerly small Utah county town. We're powerless against this rise. Yeah,
we used to just eat potatoes.
You know who is not powerless? If you lived on Mount Maple, you know, let's say you just moved over there. You either set up a tent or build a house. You don't have reception there. You can't order Chili's. You can't get down to Costco to get gas. You just sit there and you don't sin. Yeah. Your life isn't that fun because you're just sitting there, but you're not sinning.
President Joseph F. Smith concurred with Kimball that Salt Lake and Ogden were becoming corrupted, but also towns close to the railroad tracks, which may give some residents pause at adding more front-runner rails and tracks. That's
in
the story.
That is A++.
How good's that?
It's so good. I love the idea that wherever a railroad or a front-runner train is extended to,
that's where sin is.
I go, I can't go too close. I want to know what the threshold is. Yesterday, for example, on Today in the Beehive, we talked about vape shops in relation to schools and parks and that kind of stuff. And legislators are going, you got to move 600 feet away. And then they go, no, you got to move 1,000 feet away. What's the threshold where sin stays away from a railroad track? Like, if I build a house within 1,000 feet of a railroad track, I'll probably start sinning more. However, the further away I get, is it like, oh, I only sin 20% as much? Or is there just a point that you get by and you go, I'm 3,000 feet away, I'm perfect. I'm not going to sin once.
If I hear a train sound, I'm sinning. So I think it's most like what you can hear. If you can hear it, you're sinning.
I used to live by train tracks, and I can assure you, when I would wake up and they'd be going, I just try to murder somebody. I go, I gotta commit a sin. I gotta kill.
It is no surprise, and the study shows, that Las Vegas is the number one most sinful city, with Los Angeles number two. In its summary of sinful states and cities, the study group noted that Las Vegas doesn't have the corner on sin. Listen to this line. From beer-loving Milwaukee to hedonistic New Orleans, the United States is filled with people behaving illicitly. No place is innocent. We all have demons.
Why? I thought we were innocent if we lived in the mountains. Now I'm confused. Hedonistic? Who was hedonistic? New Orleans. Yeah, we actually, that's funny that she mentioned those three towns. We've been there, all of those, within the last 2 years.
The worst category of sin for Utah was vanity. Where the Beehive State came in at 21 in the nation.
How do you grade vanity as a sin?
Stop. I hate when you ask stuff like that.
I don't understand how this occurs. You can't possibly grade vanity is a sin and apply it on a state-by-state basis where you go, you know who's the 21st most vain state?
You can't possibly do anything they do.
Well, yeah.
What are we talking? It's Wallet Hub. Does anybody know what Wallet Hub does?
I think you're getting caught up too much on the Wallet Hub. I don't think it's a Wallet Hub issue. I think it's an issue in general.
No, Wallet Hub is the one that always gets picked up by media as though they've produced some fabulous study.
Wallet Hub.
That's impenetrable.
I will say this is a good study.
It's a great study.
Piqued my interest.
All right. And now here's what's going on since the pandemic. They say the pandemic will have a long-lasting impact on the health of the American people, in part due to the habits they'll pick up during the weeks and months they're forced to stay home. Here are a few statistics from the Wallet Hub research on what's happening.
See, they're not just dicking around. They are actually doing things. They have real statistics.
Alcohol sales are up 55%. Online sales are up 243%. Marijuana sales are soaring.
That's not a statistic.
Porn consumption was up 6.4% by March 17th, 2019. I don't know.
Well, that's pretty good.
That has nothing to do with the pandemic.
If it's only 6%, that's great.
I don't know why the 2019 thing.
That's natural inflation.
people are eating more and calling it the COVID-15, referring to an average of 15-pound gains during the pandemic.
Are people actually eating more? Because
yeah, I am.
You're not eating more. You're just eating like you normally do, which is more than the average person.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It has nothing to do with
COVID. A little bit semantics, but I do eat more than the average person.
I don't know anybody that I come in contact with that I feel like is eating more or less or is put on weight strictly because of COVID. Mm-hmm. I think everybody's just been kind of the same. So I take a little bit of umbrage with that statement.
People are exercising less, moving less, sleeping more.
I don't think those things are true.
They're binge-watching favorite TV shows by an average of 3 or more episodes in a row.
Why do we suck so bad? That's all I'm taking from this article. Is this like a call to action to not do any of the behaviors we're currently doing? What are we supposed to do in the midst of a pandemic? Let's indulge this idea, okay? It's a pandemic. You can't go anywhere. You can't do anything. So you're just sitting at home. What are you actually supposed to be doing, you know? You just sit there all day and you meditate, and so then you haven't committed a sin. I'm not really sure what you're supposed to be doing.
You know what I'd do? I'd put 2 masks on.
It seems like through the prism of this article, anything that you would do as a behavior at home would be considered a sin. Like the person who's sitting at home, again, because of a pandemic, and they go, I don't got anything to do. I'll go for a walk for a little bit. Then I'm going to watch some episodes of Parks and Rec. That person just committed like a bunch of sins, according to this article.
That's sinful. Because particularly if they didn't do it with 2 masks on.
Well, particularly because the walk took them right next to the train tracks and they smoked a cigarette while they were there.
Listen, mask up.
That's the purpose of this segment.
That's the real message of the segment. The real takeaway, mask up.
That is a crazy article.
Yeah, it's fascinating. All right, we, as I mentioned, have a guest, a live in-person guest, our very first one of those. So let's go to that. And now this is the place. Robert Rask is here from Rask Guitars. Robert, how are you?
I'm good.
So good to have you.
Thank you.
So tell us about, do you mind if I name that guitar Black Beauty? Tell us about
sure,
this thing.
Sure. His former name, the guitar formerly known as Orphan Orange.
Ooh, I love it.
Orphan Orange is a much better name than Black Beauty. So I'm going to give Robert props on the naming. You're out already.
I read Black Beauty in like grade school, and now like anything I call it
that. I don't
know.
Orphan Orange is a little more negative than Black Beauty.
Yeah. that's a good thing. So how did you get into this?
Into guitar building, you know, like everybody, I've been through some hard things. About 16 years ago, went through a divorce, kind of lost my family. And like anybody else, I mean, you know, hard things bring about good things, I guess, in the long run, right? So I turned to music. I started playing the guitar for the first time, and I found it very healing and cathartic. And, you know, I started writing songs, and that helped me to get a lot of that emotion out. And then the second thing that happened was, as I started looking at this guitar I was playing, and thinking, wow, that's all made out of wood. I wonder how that works. And I wonder if I could do that, you know. I've been a lifelong woodworker. So, yeah, I started my journey then and started researching. It took me 2 years to kind of build up the nerve to try it out.
So to walk me through those 2 years, because I find those 2 years fascinating.
Sure.
What are you doing? Are you watching YouTube videos on how to make guitar? Or are you just like... You already have the skills of a woodman.
Yeah.
Is that
woodman?
A woodman?
Yeah. Yep.
So you're a woodman already.
Yes.
So you've got that base of knowledge. And then you've got to do this. Like my dream in life, so you know, Robert, is to build a canoe with my bare hands.
Awesome.
Which he does not possess the skills to do. I can assure you right now.
Bare hands, though.
Yeah. Like I'm not going to wear gloves. Robert. I'm not going to wear gloves.
Splinter Man over there. Aw.
Ow! So, but I'll never accomplish that.
With your bare hands, I would agree.
I'll never accomplish it with all the equipment needed.
Okay.
So how do you go about, like, I'm fascinated by, like, you wake up one morning, you're like, I'm going to build guitars. This is how I'm going to, like, deal with life. And true. Life is sad and miserable. We can all agree with that.
Yeah.
Can be.
You agree.
Absolutely.
That. So life is what it is. And so you got to get through it somehow. And you say, I'm going to build guitars. Well, what do you do? What's the next step?
So I started reading books. That was the first thing I did. Because YouTube didn't really... I mean, it was barely coming out back then. And there wasn't a single video on luthery, you know, or building guitars. So so I read books. I found a couple of local luthiers that built guitars and went and started picking their brains and, you know, bugging the hell out of them. And, you know, talking to everybody I could and... Just started researching it that way. There's one book that I read, Guitar Making Traditions and Technology, and it's kind of referred to as like the Bible of guitar building. So I consume that over and over again, and then I finally kind of built the nerve up and started.
How many times did you fall asleep while reading that book? That sounds so boring.
Most people it would be. Yeah, totally. Yeah, and I never did that. There's something wrong because I'll watch now. There are a lot of good YouTube videos, I've listened to 3-hour lectures on tap tuning and voicing tops and stuff, and it would probably kill any normal human being with boredness.
You said a word twice that I didn't recognize. It's Lucifer, Luther. What did you say? Luther.
It goes back to our sin discussion. Robert's right. Playing into it.
There you go. Luthery. So I'm a luthier. And that's...
What is that? Is that string like a Seventh-day Adventist?
close. Just a different day.
We go to church on Thursday.
We meet every Wednesday, 7 to 9 a.m.
Right. So, yeah, it's a stringed instrument builder. And it comes from the French word lute. And so, yeah.
So you go through, you're reading these books, and you figure out how to do it. Now, at what point do you realize, I'm going to make a business out of this?
It wasn't until after my first guitar was completed. And that took me several years. Because after I kind of started, then life happens. I ended up getting married, moved, didn't have anywhere to work on anything. So it went on to storage for several years. Then the first guitar, once I started back up, it was another 2 years of trying to figure it out. And I'd get stuck on a lot of different processes and maybe sit around for a couple of months. And it was part-time hobby. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
So I get that first guitar, and that was life-changing, man. It was really cool. So I've got all this time and anticipation that I'd been working on this thing. And I didn't even know if it was going to hold together. You know, you've got 150 pounds of tension pulling on these strings, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm terrified that this thing is just going to implode on itself when we string it up. You know? So I don't know if it's going to sound like rubber bands on a cardboard box, or if it's going to be playable or play in tune or anything, you know. And I'd never set up a guitar and made the nut and saddle or set the intonation or the action. So I actually took it to somebody to get it across the finish line and string it up. And that day, this guy had 30 years of experience. I trusted him. So we take the guitar in there, and he goes through the motions. And the very first sound I hear was that first string as he's tightening it up. And you hear this, as it comes.
Yeah.
I'm like, ooh, I think that's going to be good. You know, he gets it all strung up, tuned up, and he plays the first few chords and measures, you know. And it just filled this little room with this just glorious sound. And I got emotional, you know.
Yeah.
And he puts the thing down and he goes, that's the best guitar I've ever heard.
Whoa.
And I was blown away. I mean, I just wanted to make something that resembled, you know, a playable guitar. And to hear this thing, it was life-changing. And I mean, that was it. It was like, there's nothing else I want to do in life.
At that point, you're addicted. Like, how do I
completely
just feel that every
completely
day?
Yeah. Well, and then you also have to understand that, you know, the connection that I have with music, you know, it saved my life in a very real sense, right? Mm. Music is powerful. It can enhance or, you know, every emotion in the human experience can be, you know, enhanced by music, right? And so, man, the thought of building something that has that much power, and then the pinnacle of what I do isn't when I finish and string up an instrument, which is an amazing moment. but it's when I hand it to somebody who then gets to take and do something with it far more important than anything I've ever done, is to create the power of music. And so that was the part where I finally went, I'm made for this. This is such a gift. I mean, I'm just humbled, you know, by the opportunity. So
other than the one you just mentioned, what's a moment where you've handed a guitar to someone, like a musician or someone, and it's just been unbelievable?
Yeah. So last October in South Carolina, I got to build a custom guitar for Edwin McCain. And so he sings that song, I'll Be.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy is just talented.
Yeah.
And so I had this opportunity, I built him this guitar, and then my family and I, we flew out to South Carolina to go meet with him. And we met him in his studio and brought in this guitar, and he pulls it out and starts playing it and everything. And it was just cool. And then he just goes from talking about this guitar and talking to me, and we're, you know, kind of doing this little interview kind of thing. He goes right into playing a song and singing, and it was a little overwhelming. It was really cool. It was really amazing. And then he ends up singing his song, you know, I'll Be.
Yeah.
And to hear that song on this instrument that I had built, you know, I mean, I can't even tell you how many weddings have been, you know, as that song has been played, right? You know, that was probably the best one.
That's cool. So how long does it take to make a guitar now for you?
I've gotten it way down. The first one was 2 years. I'm down to probably about 2 weeks of labor.
2 weeks.
I haven't done one straight. I mean, I've got five, or, you know, right now I've got seven guitars going. And so I haven't done any one straight through. The fastest straight through is 3 weeks, but that's with working on other stuff as well.
And what's the team like? Is it just you at the shop, or what's going on?
Yeah. I've got a couple of guys that are apprentices that, you know, kind of come and go part time.
That's
and,
cool.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And so they're enjoying learning the craft.
And where's your shop at?
Orem, Utah.
Orem, Utah. Rask yep. Guitars. So I talked about, like, hey, handing this guitar to someone and hearing them play it and the emotions that brings out. What we're about to do will not bring that emotion. We're going to hand this guitar to that guy right there.
No. Right. Well, if I start crying, then, you know.
You won't.
Real quick, I want to piggyback on what Rob was saying. I love everything you've said so far, and it's actually resonated with me personally. The cathartic aspect of playing guitar for me, I don't know how to build them. I play guitar not at a very good level, but as an amateur. But it still provides that same sense of, like, no matter what's going on outside in life, I can sit down, I can play a few chords. I could sing Bob Dylan at a very bad level, which is crazy because Bob Dylan already sings very badly. But the main point is that resonates greatly with me when I hear, like, hey, sometimes things aren't going great, and you sit down in a room and you hear that statement you made about you hearing the first chord on a guitar you built. That was like giving me goosebumps, because I've had that feeling when I just play a chord on a guitar that I purchased from somebody else. It could be a $100 guitar. Like, I can't even put myself in the frame of mind where you go, oh my gosh, I've sunk years into doing this particular thing at a time in my life when maybe things weren't going great. And you take it to this Lucifer guy, whatever he is, and he strings that first one, and you hear the first pluck of a string. And it's like, okay, this is getting somewhere. And then you hear the first chord with all six strings, and you go, I made that. That's freaking cool.
It is.
I can't even imagine being in that position. So real quick, I do have a question about that. I love the idea of this cathartic journey that you go through of, hey, I started building guitars, then I got good at building guitars, then I realized I could make a business out of this, and now I'm building guitars for random people and musicians alike. Is there any part of that journey from start to finish that you really hone in on? Is it when you hand the guitar over? Is it like when you're alone in your shop and you're just going, I'm working with this wood with my hands? Is there any particular part that stands out, and maybe not in a way that people would think, where you go, sometimes I'm like overwhelmed in my shop and I sit there and go, this is incredible. I'm setting the, you know, whatever's up top here on the guitar. Is there any part of that journey that just really stands out?
I would say all of it.
All of it?
I mean, and it may be sounding cliche or something, but all of it. I'm amazed. I mean, I don't know. I feel more fulfilled in life. I mean, probably because I'm doing you know, what I love.
Right.
But I mean, I get up in the morning, I'm excited to get into the shop on weekends, you know, I mean, I love spending time with my family. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, I'm like, oh, I can't wait till Monday. Yeah. I can't wait to get in there. But yeah, there's times where I zone in or kind of get into the zone.
Yeah.
While I'm building or shaping braces or carving a neck or something. And that's pretty neat. All of it, but the pinnacle of everything I do does happen when you hand the guitar off. Mm-hmm. And you know, I get musicians come into the shop all the time to come check out the instruments, and that's always a treat, no matter mm-hmm. how good or bad they play. Mm-hmm. But maybe 1 in 10, maybe 1 in 20 will come in and they're just phenomenal. And they pull sounds out of the guitar that you didn't know it was capable of making. And that's really exciting because they'll pick one of their favorites, you know, they'll play several, and every guitar resonates with a different person, but they find that you get that connection. They find that one guitar that just resonates with them and something magical happens. I mean, it really is there's no other word for it. It's a magical experience to see them where the guitar is almost kind of giving back to them. They're putting into the guitar is giving back, and there's this bond that kind of creates. It's really crazy. And then you just, it just consumes like the room and the energy, and man, that's an overwhelming feeling when you get a deeper appreciation for what you've made after.
Let's hear this bad boy. Give us an overwhelming feeling.
I'm super
Chris, if you wouldn't mind. So Chris is gonna play this thing.
I'm playing for like 10 seconds and then you guys got
to
take over.
Give it to us. Give it to us.
Very good guitar.
Keep playing. You. Robert, how do people find you?
RaskGuitars.com, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, YouTube.
You're on TikTok.
Yes. Just a couple videos.
That's cool.
Probably 2 followers, I think. Just started. But YouTube. YouTube's probably the best because there's some pretty good videos on there. So, yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
You're in Orem, Utah. You said RaskGuitars.com?
Yep.
RaskGuitars.com. This is the place. Now we're gonna go to No Baller. Whoa, wait. We're going to go to an ad from our sponsor, Chatbucks.
Okay, we were so excited about having Robert here, we just figured we'd play 2 ads and 2 intro videos, which, honestly, I can't fault anybody here, because that actually was sweet. I was way into what he was saying. Mm-hmm. We're going to do a transition. Hard transition, Clint, not a soft one, okay?
I like it hard.
Because now we're here to talk about sports. Mm-hmm. So there's kind of 2 things I'm going to concentrate on today. First is, in regards to the game last night we discussed at the top of the show, Utah Jazz, Los Angeles Lakers, right? Jazz whomped them, canned a bunch of threes. Discussion after the game, oh, this is sweet. Jazz are doing good. Oh, but the Lakers didn't have Schroeder and Anthony Davis. What's going on here? There's a quote that comes out after the game. Markieff Morris is being interviewed. He says, we see the Jazz. We know they beat our ass tonight. But in the playoffs, it's a different story, right? Which, I mean, that's a fine thing to say if you're Markieff Morris. It doesn't bother me in any way, shape, or form. I think if you are an NBA fan, you're not really worried about what the Lakers do at all in the regular season as long as they make the playoffs and they have a healthy roster. And I also think that anybody who watches the NBA right now is pretty tuned into the fact that the Jazz are playing awesome basketball, and there will come a point in time when we will see if this is sustainable in the playoffs, right? And I said on the very first time we recorded this segment that we don't need to get swept up in those things because we will have answers to all those questions come May and June and when the NBA Finals are occurring, right? So I watched the game last night, which wasn't as entertaining as I would have liked because I wanted a closer game. But still, if you're a Jazz fan, you're sitting there going, this is awesome. Like, we whooped up on a team that everybody regards as the best team. Granted, they need to be full strength, but still, it carries weight when you smash a LeBron team by 20-plus points, right? And so all I hear after this is this Markieff Morris quote, and it just drags us back down into the cesspool of what I don't want people to be a part of, and I don't want to have to see over and over. So again, this is another reminder. There will be something after virtually every game that the Jazz play against a good team. We saw it against the Clippers, which was the Jazz are going to struggle with wings. Looks like their defense is not as sustainable as we think against a contender. And we saw it after the Lakers game, which is the Jazz blasted LeBron and they're going to be the one seed. And oh, look at Markieff Morris showing us disrespect. He doesn't know. None of these things matter. Okay. We will have a definitive answer to the questions of whether or not the Jazz are a contender, whether the Lakers are, who's going to win, all that kind of stuff. We will have an answer come playoff time. If you are genuinely invested right now in thinking and arguing and doing those and talking about those things, I would encourage you to go bet money. Literally, just go and put your money.
What?
No, just go and put your money where your mouth is. Just like if you believe that the Jazz are going to win the NBA title, you should go and bet on that. Like
I already have.
Okay. I truly do believe that. And then at that point, you just go, yeah, I mean, I think the Jazz are going to win the title. I bet money on them. And I go, okay, that carries weight with me, right? So that's a quick aside. The real topic of discussion today, and it actually ties into last night's game. The Jazz are playing in their city uniforms last night, which if you remember, the city uniforms were debuted probably 2 years ago. I might be getting that off, but 2 or 3 years ago. They were the red, orange, yellow gradients that many people, myself included, were like, this is a cool look. It's supposed to kind of symbolize the desert part of Utah that doesn't get as much pub amongst the Jazz uniforms. It's usually more, you know, snowing and icy mountain concentrated. And so this was like an extension to the southern part of the state, so to speak. So people are fired up about that at the time. And again, like I was on board, I go, these uniforms are pretty cool, you know? It's a decent changeup. I don't mind them. So now we fast forward to present day and they have alternate city uniforms, I guess. So they're alternates.
Yeah.
And the majority of them are black in the middle. And then they have the old original city gradient things on the sleeves and on the shorts. Okay. So I don't like these ones as much. I just think they're a little bit uglier. But the more that I watch them play in these in a season where the Jazz are smoking hot, I've started thinking about the topic of uniforms. And especially as I watch the NBA and like they've come out with their second iterations of every team's city uniforms. And almost across the board, they're so much more atrocious compared to the original iterations. And also usually more atrocious than the original uniforms in general of each individual team, okay? So I think about this on a sports fan level and like how I connect with sports in general. And one of the main things that draws me to sports is the familiar rhythm that comes with following a team or a sport over the course of many, many years or a season, but really when seasons string into seasons and string into decades, right? And so you have these like really hard memories that are tethered to specific points in time where I go, oh man, that reminds me of the shot John Stockton hit against the Rockets to send him to the finals. And that reminds me of the time that the Jazz played the Warriors after the Warriors had beat the Mavericks and Dirk Nowitzki is the 1-8 matchup and Darren Williams went off and they made the Western Conference Finals before getting beat by the Spurs. Oh, and that reminds me of the Donovan Mitchell rookie year performance against the Oklahoma City Thunder when he went crazy. There's all these specific points, right? And like, if you go to a fan who's followed a team closely for a long period of time and you get them talking, it's one of my favorite things to do because me, a person who follows sports closely in general, I can usually talk through these memories with almost any team and player with another person. So I go, oh, you're a huge fan of this team. Oh, do you remember this and that? And they go, you better believe I do. And then they can dive even deeper, you know? If somebody comes across me and starts trying to talk about Nebraska football, like I go so far down a rabbit hole that person sits there and goes, you're a freak. I regret bringing it up. I don't want to hear about this. This is too much. It's too overwhelming. Okay?
That's what I do when you start talking about anything, right?
which again is completely valid. Like sports are funny because they're a huge emotional draw for me and for many people. And at the same time, when you're able to separate, you go, this is kind of asinine that I'm way into this thing, right? So my sister, who cares nothing about sports, she always kind of like makes fun of me where it's just like, this is very strange. Like you're a very bizarre human being, essentially, which is again,
she's right.
Which is again, a valid, not critique. It's just a valid observation on her part.
Just a valid point.
So I get an email from her. She's out living in Washington right now, the state of Washington. And I get an email from her like, I don't know, a year or two ago. She goes, you know what? The weirdest thing just happened. I always make fun of people who wear sports jerseys, mainly because of you, referring to me. And I was at work. She's an accountant. So like all these accountants are getting together. She goes, and I noticed this interaction where somebody's wearing a Green Bay Packers thing, which is my favorite pro football team. She goes, somebody's wearing a Green Bay Packers jersey and they're walking around. And as it turns out, there's all these Packers fans in the office and everybody stopped them and they all congregated and they get together and they start doing something similar to what I'm saying, which is, oh, dude, do you remember that Aaron Rodgers pass against the Cardinals when he threw the Hail Mary? And so everybody's throwing out these memories and stuff. And they're kind of connecting on this real, real hard emotional level, which is actually not unsimilar to what Robert was saying in the prior segment, right? Mm-hmm. Like there are all of these interesting things that are usually interesting to a specific person or subset of people, and not necessarily interesting to the other people. But everybody has whatever that is in their own life, you know? So for him, like, I build a guitar, and when I hear somebody play that guitar, it makes me emotional talking about it, right? And for me, one of those things is sports. So there are specific moments where I go, if you bring up LeBron's block against Golden State, or you bring up that Rodgers Hail Mary or stuff, like, they're very real specific memories where I go, it's honestly a little bit overwhelming to remember, like, what I was doing at the time, what was going on in my life, and just the emotion that brought out of me, okay? Mm-hmm. So back to the story about my sister. She's telling me about this via email. She goes, this is like the first time I've kind of understood that hard connection that draws people to sports, that goes beyond just like this quote-unquote camaraderie of like, we're all in this together and I'm a fan and you're a fan. People like intertwine the way that they watch sports and the way they remember stuff about their team with their own lives. So, the LeBron block, I remember what was going, I literally remember like everything that was going on in my life that day leading up to the game itself, of which I remember virtually every play, but it's just like a really hard anchor for your life, okay? So I wanna tie this into the uniform discussion. College football is the very best of this. College football, there are certain teams where they understand that uniforms specifically are part of that familiar rhythm, right? And they're a really hard anchoring point across decades that allow a fan to go, Penn State, your uniforms don't change. They're very basic. It's blue, it's white, and they just run around and they play in the same uniforms every single Saturday, right? Mm-hmm. And I watch a Penn State game now, and it reminds me of, you can go back, you know, like, oh, this reminds me of Todd Blackledge back in the early 80s. This reminds me of Kerry Collins in the mid-90s on the undefeated Penn State team. This reminds me of Saquon Barkley. The main point is, it just reminds you of these things in a way that I don't think you get when uniforms are constantly changing, okay? So, like, I actually didn't realize that I thought this as much as I think it until I was kind of brainstorming for this segment. So what brought this on, I came across some Nebraska highlights from, like, 10 years ago. And because I want to just cause pain and inflict it on myself, I go, yeah, sure, I'll watch some Nebraska highlights from the last 20 years when they've just been garbage every single season. And I'd kind of forgotten that Nebraska, which had the same uniforms all my childhood and up into the 2000s, they started doing little tweaks with them, right? So just a simple one, the first thing, they started putting stripes down their pants. Before, it was just Nebraska was red, they were white, they were basic, it was a red N on the helmet. It just symbolized everything that you think about Nebraska football. Mm-hmm. We're going to line up, we're going to run triple option, we're just going to try to smash people out of the stadium, right? And so they started adding these things. And I'm not making the connection between this and them turning into a losing team. And I'm also not making the connection that you are what your uniform symbolizes. I say this merely as uniforms are a very strange connection that, like, sometimes you can't verbalize. It's just something you feel when you watch your team. And even in the moment, sometimes you don't fully realize it, okay? So back to the highlights. I watch these Nebraska highlights and I go, I don't really like that they're wearing these uniforms because it doesn't connect me to the teams of the 90s and the teams of the 80s and the teams of the 70s. Not because they're bad. It just visually looks like a different team. And I don't feel like, let's say 5% of that connection is diminished. That's a big deal when you're a fan and you're sitting there going, oh, I really like the feeling that this brings, okay? So, full circle. We come back to the NBA City uniforms and the Utah Jazz. The Jazz are in the midst of their best season in 20 plus years, as we said many times on this podcast. And they're wearing the city uniforms quite a bit, right? So the court changes, the uniforms changes, and it's just a very different aesthetic, right? And meanwhile, the Jazz note, which is like their most iconic logo and brand and stretches back to, you know, Pistol Pete Maravich, all that kind of stuff. It's kind of getting short shrift in a way that I don't love when I think about this threading together of decades of a team, right? And it kind of bums me out a little bit because I feel strange when I project into the future and I go, let's say every Jazz fan's truest wish is realized and they win an NBA title this year. I do think there's a little strange something where, like, you go back and watch highlights from the season and you're going, I can't imagine they're wearing city uniforms anything close to what those uniforms are in that day. And you're just going, like, what are the – that's kind of weird. Like, why aren't the Jazz just wearing the note? Why aren't they wearing the things that, you know, the early Stockton Malone teams, the Pistol Pete, even those even the Stockton Malone teams, like, they transitioned at the end to those Rocky Mountain uniforms. Mm-hmm. And if you really think about it, I don't love that my head, when I think about the NBA Finals Utah Jazz teams, goes to those uniforms. It's like, it's a little bit of something where I just go, why aren't they wearing those same uniforms the whole time? So I get that NBA teams and professional teams in general, they want to sell things. They want to make more money. And part of that process is we design and make different uniforms. We get people excited about them. They spend more money and everybody wins because those people have uniforms that they think are cool and we get more money. Okay. So I get the whole corporatization process of that. I think we can have the best of both worlds. On the one hand, I think I do believe that every team should, like, hone in on what is our version of Penn State's uniforms? What is our version of the USC Trojans football team? What is our version of Alabama Crimson Tide? Like, they just wear the same things all the time, and it really hammers home just, this is cool, and this team and this fandom spans all of time. That's the sense that you get from it, right? Mm-hmm. So I think you can have that. You just go, we're the note. We have gorgeous uniforms as is. We have a gorgeous color scheme as is. The Jazz yellow uniforms, the purple uniforms, the green uniforms, the blue uniforms, all of those centered around the note, they're awesome. They're A++. They're all good, okay? Mm-hmm. You can still have that. On the other hand, when I pay attention to Jazz Twitter, one of the things that I see cycled around, which is really cool, there's a lot of people who follow the Jazz that are into design, and so they'll do these mock-ups of, you know what would be cool is if we had jerseys like this, or what do you guys think about this color scheme, or that kind of stuff. And there's a lot of cool visuals and ideas that come from that, right? So if you're the Jazz and you want to have the best of both worlds, which is rock solid connection to fans over the course of time and making money, it seems like there's an avenue where you can open up this design process to other people, have a design offer, whatever you want to be, you know, like essentially a fan vote where you go, all right, people give us your ideas, you know, throw them out there. We'll have people vote on them and whichever ones rise to the top, we will sell in our team store. We can do that. And you know, designer Clint Betts, you know, that's the person mm-hmm. who created this uniform.
With my own hands.
It's almost like a piece of memorabilia where you go, oh, this is the 2021 version of, you know, so-and-so's design. The players are not wearing that on the court, but it's a way of expanding your memorabilia collection. It's the way of Jazz, or it's a way for the Jazz to make money. And it's also the way for the uniforms to remain the same on the court, for everybody to have the best of all those worlds.
I hear what you're saying. I think here's something to think about. 20 years from now, we're going to watch Clippers highlights of this team. This is maybe the best Clippers team ever, right? Or close to it. And on the its patch, it's going to say Bumble. I think the NBA's already sold out, my friend. It's already over. Like, we're going to watch, no one's going to watch Oklahoma City Thunder highlights. But if they were to watch it 20 years from now, it says Love's Gas Station.
While that's so, I do understand what you're saying, and while I do believe that's partially true, I think it's different if you have the Utah Jazz Five for the Fight logo on the traditional Jazz uniforms. I think it will just be like, oh, this is when sponsor patches were incorporated, but it's not as distracting. The Clippers patch, while distracting and strange, I do think it's more distracting because it's on these weird, like, Los Angeles, it looks like newspaper, New York Times font and stuff. I don't know. Maybe there's not a good solution. Maybe we're past the point of no return. And maybe my wishes, they're going up in a poof of smoke.
It's over.
So, okay. So maybe this whole segment was pointless.
It was.
I mainly bring it up as I just wish more teams were conscious of retaining some of the past when it comes to their uniform scheme. That's what today's No Ballers
all
about.
Think about the Brooklyn Nets, another, like, but maybe their best season.
Here's the problem, though. You're bringing up teams that have no past. Like Oklahoma City and the Clippers, they don't have iconic uniforms or color schemes from the past. The Brooklyn Nets
do.
The Nets
have a bit of a past, as much of a past as the Jazz. They have some finals. And they have freaking Motorola. It's Motorola on their patch.
The Nets have a past, but I don't think the Nets have a fan base that is passionate about a specific thing about their past. They're not sitting there going, remember that old Nets logo with the hoop and ball? Man, we really need to retain that. Not every team actually has that, you know? And especially in a league that goes through expansion and brings teams in, you know, in the last 20 years, like the Orlando Magic don't have an iconic a logo or a color scheme from the past. They have a logo and color scheme from the past.
That is like kind of iconic. And they've got Disney. I love Orlando Magic's color scheme and their sponsor. Disney's amazing. You know the most interesting thing you said in that whole whatever the hell you just said?
Probably that my sister thought I was a freak.
You said short shrift.
Oh, yeah.
I found that fascinating. Why do you use that?
Thank you.
Why do you use that?
If you don't take if that uniform discussion was all drivel and it's just useless, at the very least, I would encourage everybody to use short shrift in
short
their day today.
Shrift.
Go use it.
And now, traffic and weather.
Did you guys see the moon this morning?
Who do you think you're talking to? You're talking to a person who opens up their window every day, says, how's the world? Oh, the moon's doing fine. I'll just worry about the rest of the world.
I'm going to pull back the curtain a little bit here. You slept here last night.
Yeah.
So you did not see the moon this morning.
Got it. Ding, 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 ding,
ding. Some people in this office, mainly one, is so professional. He comes here the night prior. He goes, I can't afford to go home. What if I slip and slide off the road and get in a wreck and I can't come into work? What if I run out of gas? What if I get a flat tire? So I bunkered down. Okay, I pulled out the old trusty sleeping bag and pillow, put it down on the couch, and I said, I'm here to stay. I'm going to be here in the morning, 6 o'clock sharp. I'll be ready to go.
So was the moon a nice crescent?
No, it was a full moon.
Oh, I like a crescent better than a full.
But it was huge.
I like the full moon. I'm with Kelly. I think
you like a full. I like a little. Like, I don't want to see the whole thing. It's kind of my like theory with nudity in movies.
It's your chase.
I like PG. I see they went into a room together. The room went dark. End scene. I get it from there. That's how I feel about the moon. Give me a little crescent. I like to know that it's there, but I don't need to see the whole thing.
I'm
with the whole thing.
Yeah, crescent, you guys like NC-17 movies.
So. Crescent moon just doesn't do anything for me. Like, I'm not watching a Disney movie. Give it to me or don't.
So yesterday we talked about a town way down south.
Yeah.
Today we're going to talk about a town way up north.
Yes.
Thank you for representing all of Utah that the snowmen in the capital do not.
Mm-hmm.
So have you guys ever heard of Newton, Utah?
Nope.
No, I love a Fig Newton, though.
Mm-hmm.
I do.
Those are good.
Yeah, I hope that's what that town is named after.
It's 12 degrees there.
Newton's not doing too well.
Get over it. Get over it, Winter.
That is cold.
Get over it.
I feel we're giving short shrift to some of these towns because Kelly always gives us the weather in the morning, you know. And Utah, especially at this time of the year, it might be a little chillier place than most people would prefer. And especially in a place like Newton, named after the traditional Fig Newton. I mean, you're not going to get a lot of great weather at 7:59 a.m. in Newton, Utah.
Well, okay, I'll tell you the high for the day.
Thank you. Okay, thank you.
32 degrees.
Oh, yeah. Nobody's golfing in Newton today. I hate to break it to the fine citizens there.
I want a Fig Newton.
I do too, actually.
That's cool about the moon. I didn't see it. I didn't sleep here either.
What we've learned from today's weather is that I slept here.
I don't know why you slept here.
I'm not doing good. So thanks for shining a light on that, Kelly, with
You're welcome.
Moon. I appreciate the weather update.
Thank you,
really
Kelly.
Throwing me under the bus.
And now, why though?
Okay, Clint, today's topic of discussion. Hydro flasks are everywhere. Why though? So we have multiple people in this office. No, they did not sleep here. I'm not going to throw my comrades under the bus and bring up personal details on air where people can go, oh, look at him. He's in such a bad state in life. No, I'm not going to do that. You know, because again, I'm a professional. Instead, I'm going to say some unnamed individuals. They've gotten really into this hydro flask craze. And not necessarily hydro flasks, but just these, I don't even know what you want to call them. They're water bottles, coffee. Okay.
They're water bottles. They okay. put their liquid bottles.
I do know what to call them. I call them liquid bottles. I go, would you mind filling up my liquid bottle over there? Which is kind of freaky because somebody hears that and goes, what do I put in it?
Don't give liquid bottles the short shrift, please.
Should we start doing a vocab word of the day? Or better yet, a term to use. Everybody, yeah. Vocab word of the day, boring, old school news. Nobody cares about that. That's done by everybody. Nobody does a phrase to say.
I like it.
Maybe I'll start choosing a phrase. Yeah. So hydro flasks. Multiple people in this office, they've gotten way into them. You, unfortunately, are one of the people who've started purchasing these in kind of large quantities, which is strange because my concept of a hydro flask is that you get one, it lasts you for all of time, and then you go from there. You've kind of gone above and beyond where you purchase a lot of these and you choose a new one each day.
No, I bring them all with me. So I have 5 hydro flasks and I like to put Diet Dr. Pepper in one, Coke Zero in another, maybe some Diet Sprite in one. So I like to have a nice, full, well-rounded options of liquids, and none of them are water. They're all soda.
How do you keep track of what's in what?
I don't.
Russian roulette with the hydro flasks.
I don't. That's kind of the fun of it.
An old Clinton Betts trademark.
That's the fun of it. It's like you don't know what's what. In fact, I try I don't even do it. I have Brooke put all the soda in my thing every morning.
Okay, you're one of those clown dicks.
And
then goes,
so I don't know. And I'm like, all right, give me it, pack them up. And I'm packing them up on, and I drink soda all day.
Yeah. So I come across a CNN article. The hydro flask is a Gen Z trend we can get behind.
Gen Z.
Which already, that's rainy.
What the hell is that?
Gen Z, it's a generation.
Is that below us?
It's below,
above us?
Yeah, it's below millennials. So it's the.
That generation.
Why?
Hate them.
Why? Why?
And first of all, Z, end of the alphabet. Oh, you get the end? Mm-hmm. So that's stupid. There's nothing but there. That's it. That's the end. Mm-hmm. That's the end of the world. I hate that. Two, I don't like them.
Yeah, that one makes more sense than the alphabet.
I don't like their personalities.
Well, maybe you do, because Gen Zers.
I don't know nothing about
Well, the thing that you know about Gen Zers is they love hydro flasks, which you also love.
Well, I'm in then, yeah.
It raises a little bit of a warning flag for me when CNN, a site that you love, but a site for me, it's whatever. I don't love it as much as you do. When they get behind a trend, especially a younger generational trend, it raises a flag, okay? Mm. So I go into this article. I go, yeah, what's going on? Why are these hydro flasks so cool? The article, it's all about these two things, these two revolutionary things that are blowing people's minds and making them want to purchase hydro flasks. Number one, color options. Which I hear and I go, okay, does it do anything different? No, but you can paint your hydro flasks all these different colors. You know, you can do peach, you can do light blue.
They paint them. But
yeah, it's not a choose your own adventure. That would be cool. That's a good idea.
Yeah, you don't paint them.
Like those places that people go and they make their own mugs, you know, where you go, Chris.
I go to those once a week.
Here, paint on whatever you want on the thing. That's a great thing to do. If Hydro Flask did that, it'd be a little cooler. Mm-hmm. The second thing, which is the thing that alarms me to no end, and the topic
I know exactly what you're going
to say. The topic of discussion, okay? The article, or the author of this CNN article, he has a line in it. He goes, he's trying out a Hydro Flask, and he says, I felt giddy the first time I woke up in the morning to a bottle of water that still had ice in it. Okay, end quote. And he goes on to just rave about, oh my gosh.
Who's this loser who's never woke up to ice water?
Hold on, we're going to get to that. He goes crazy and he goes, these hydro flasks, they'll blow your mind. They'll keep your liquid hot or cold for who knows what amount of time. It could be till the end of time. It could be, you know, it could be we drop a bunch of bombs on Earth and everybody dies and there's a bunch of hydro flasks sitting there. And then aliens come and land on Earth 500 years later and they go, oh my gosh, this coffee's still hot. And they take a sip. Or, oh my gosh, can you believe this? There was a nuclear holocaust and there's ice in this hydro flask. Granted, it's radioactive. You shouldn't drink it. But it blows their minds, these aliens, right? So this guy, he's in the same boat. So I read it. And I don't have a hydro flask. I've never experimented with them. I'm not an experimental man. I'm a millennial. Okay? And I go, what the hell are you talking about? When I drink something, yeah, I prefer cold stuff. I prefer hot stuff. I prefer lukewarm stuff.
Why are you telling us what you prefer to drink?
Now let me. Just,
that's so insane.
Let me just go back.
So sometimes I'll drink lukewarm. Sometimes I'll drink cold. Sometimes I do like hot. What the hell?
Let me just peel back the curtain into my life.
So you like all the different degrees?
Yeah, I realized as I was saying that wasn't ideal. I don't know.
I like all the different degrees. Sometimes warm. I'm lukewarm.
So let me just say, I'm accepting of all liquids in any form that they want to be.
Sometimes like, room temperature. No big deal.
I like hot water sometimes, but I like cold water with ice. And then when it melts and it gets lukewarm, I like that water too. No, I say that because when I want a hot liquid, I pour it into whatever. And I go, yeah, I'm going to drink this hot liquid. And then if it becomes less hot and I don't like it, I'll just dump it or something. Or usually it's too hot and I got to wait for a while and then I drink it and then I'm good to go. Same
this
thing with cold.
This is so dumb. Everything you're telling...
Let me just peel back the curtain on how I drink a cold liquid.
Sometimes I'll drink hot and it's a little bit too hot for me, so I got to wait. I got to wait.
So what I do when I drink ice water, here's how it goes.
If it's a little too cold, I'll wait. Till it gets a little bit warmer.
If it's too cold, I go, this is fine. It's not in a hydro flask. It's going to melt pretty quick. And it's going to...
Oh. Why are you telling us what temperature of liquid you drink and how you do it? That's so crazy. You're like, so sometimes I'll drink a drink and it's too hot, so I'll have to wait till it cools down. No. No S. No S.
Whoa.
No
Whoa.
S.
Whoa. Okay. S-word. Okay.
Substitute the S word there.
I say this with a purpose, okay?
There's no purpose.
The purpose is I hear about the main reason people love hydro flasks, which is I need it to be ice cold or incredibly hot at all times. And this goes contrary to how I drink liquid. I just, so
Shut
a quick
up!
A quick explainer on how I drink a lukewarm.
This goes counter to how you drink liquid? This is so crazy.
So like,
this is the craziest thing you've ever said.
So what I normally do for lunch, let's just set the stage there. I like a nice sandwich. And I usually pour pour a glass of water and I put some ice in it, but I go, I don't want it right now. I got to let it melt a little.
What is
if
happening?
That were in a hydro flask, that'd be a huge problem because I got to take a sip and I go, that's too cold. We could have a nuclear holocaust and it'd still be icy at the end of it. And then it'd be a big problem for me. So what
I don't get what you're saying. You don't like hydro flasks because they keep it at the exact temp. You like the... What? What are you saying?
No. I'm saying I don't understand the hydro flask craze because I don't think anybody is sitting there going, I need my liquid to be ice cold or flaming hot for 500 years.
Yeah.
I think everybody, if they were honest with themselves, would just be like... Now, how I truly drink an icy liquid, they give the same boring thing that I've been doing. They're
yeah,
just like,
man,
it doesn't...
we went on a journey for that point. This is...
I mean, it took us 20 minutes, but I don't verbalize things well sometimes.
Okay, now I get it. You didn't have to go through all the different explanations of the liquid that you drink or don't drink. And the temperatures and how you do it. Everyone, when they drink something hot, will wait for it to cool down.
So, okay, but everybody uses hydro flasks, and they always tell me the main reason that you should use a hydro flask is because your liquid is kept super hot all the time, so I'm kind of confused.
Yeah.
Because you yourself just, in one sentence, explained what I could not in 20 minutes. Which is, I just need things to cool down a little bit or do that. And so a hydro flask, it kind of actually prevents that from happening, which goes contrary to what I want in a liquid consumption.
Well, here's what I consume liquid. In a liquid consumption. So... Here's the thing that you can do with the hydro flask.
What about this? Is mainly a why though segment. How am I supposed to drink? What do I do? How do other people drink?
Here's what
How
you
do they
do.
Not talk about it all the time?
So, say you put something hot in your old hydro flask, okay? And it stays that temperature that you put it in, right? And then you twist it off, you pour it into a cup. What you can do, you just wait a couple minutes and then drink it.
So, why am I pouring it into the cup? Why didn't I just pour it into the cup to begin with? I'm confused
you
by
You can
all
do whatever
this.
You want. If you don't want to pour it into the cup, you don't have to pour it in the cup. You don't have to do anything you don't want to do.
How do I obtain the liquid in the first place?
Here's what I thought you were going to talk about. I had no idea that was where you're going to go.
Yeah.
What I love about hydro flasks is you can put stickers on them.
Oh, that's part of a big thing in the CNN thing.
Yeah, you can put a nice sticker. My kids, I got a hydro flask. I got a hydro flask for all of my kids. And we all got stickers, and they bought me a bunch of stickers. And I put them on there. It's like my favorite thing in the world. It's like, oh, I love my kids every time I see it.
Now I'm going to have to take your part. You are so, that was so, that was dumber than what I was saying.
Every time I see my Hydro Flask, I'm like, damn, I love my kids.
She said, you know what Hydro Flask does for me? I go, I just love my kids because the stickers remind me of them. And every time I take a sip of this liquid, oh no, it's too hot. Let me pour it into a cup that I could just have poured it in the first place.
Oh, that's then easy.
But the cup wouldn't.
Oh, we don't do hot. That's easy.
But the cup wouldn't remind me that I love my kids because how could I remember that I love my kids without stickers? I never understand this idea that parents always push on me.
I forget about my kids until I see my Hydro Flask. I really do. I see the Hydro, I'm like, oh yeah, I have kids. I have four of them. I love them.
If that were true, I would understand the Hydro Flask. Because then I go, oh, okay. Without the Hydro Flask, all parents forget they have kids. They're just sitting there in their own world going, damn, life is cool. Oh, I got responsibilities! My Hydro Flask! It just reminded me! But maybe that is true. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's true for parents. So maybe the bone I have to pick is only with people who don't have kids that use Hydro Flask. I don't know what their excuse is. The parents, it makes sense now. I actually think I've learned a lot about myself and about Hydro Flask users in general for this segment.
You know what we've learned? The different temperatures of liquid that you drink. That's what we learned over here.
If anybody wants, I could go for all day about this, so I'll probably have to cut myself off. If anybody wants to learn more, they can feel free to reach out. I mean, I could talk about this subject for days and days and days.
Let's go to Dear Utah. Dear Utah is everyone's favorite segment of this show. Maybe, probably, we'll see. But first, a quick word from our sponsor, Traeger. I love Traeger grills.
Oh,
they're so good.
Oh my gosh. So you have two Traeger grills or just one?
I just have one. I'm not some.
Well, no,
rich.
You have a portable one.
Let
though.
Me tell you about the temperature I like my meat at. At a certain point, it gets hot enough that you can eat it. Now, I don't like it when it's not fully cooked. When it's overcooked, I don't like
it. We should do a whole segment about the temperatures we eat and drink things at. No, you have a portable Traeger and a bigger Traeger, right?
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, I have a Traeger
you
in my
house.
You
have one and a half Traegers.
I have a Traeger at my house, and then I have a portable one that I'll take camping with me. And when you get a Traeger steak out in the mountains, unbelievable. And that portable cooks it just as well as the big one.
I never had meat off a Traeger until a couple years ago when you got one. And I came over, and there were steaks coming out. I believe there was some chicken. There was all sorts of stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't say this as just like a corporate shill. It was so good. I couldn't even handle it. It was one of those things that I pushed back at first, because usually there's the fads, like the Hydro Flask we just discussed, where anybody you meet, they go, have you ever had meat off a Traeger? And I go, no, but it can't be as good as you're saying. And so then I had it, and I became one of those people. So now I go around, I go, hey, listen, I eat Traeger meat at 152 degrees. I let it sit out for a little bit. It cools down, 145. Then I eat it. It's perfect. It's so good.
It's so good.
It's so good, dude.
I love Traeger so much. Let's play the Dear Utah intro, and then we'll go straight to the Dear Utah segment. Buy a Traeger grill. You can buy them anywhere you want.
Yeah.
It's easy to buy one.
Sure, I'll buy
it's
one.
It's easy to buy them. It's unbelievable. You'll never have food like that. It's better than a Ruth's Chris steak, and that's my highest compliment, because Ruth's Chris is freaking good. Here's Dear Utah. If you have questions or a comment about Utah, email us at dearutah@thebeehive.com or hit us up on social media. All of our accounts are at the Beehive HQ. Use the hashtag Dear Utah. We also have a voicemail. You can text us. We'll send that out on social media. Kelly, what's our Dear Utah for the day?
So we got an email from Calvin.
Calvin. Hey, Calvin.
He says, why doesn't...
Is he here? Calvin.
He's not here.
Hey, Cal.
Calvin, if you want to know what type of water I drink and at what temperature, feel free to reach out.
Hey, Calvin. Good to see you.
Yes. Why doesn't Utah have a Major League Baseball team, and what would you guys name a team?
Okay, so shut up. You. I'm taking this one.
I thought you said that to Kelly, and I was prepared to defend.
No, I was pointing at you. I would never tell Kelly to shut up.
Okay.
I would tell her to S up. Because I don't say shut to women. Here's what I have to say. There absolutely should be a Major League Baseball team. There's no question about that. And the default when this happens is going to be we should put it in Salt Lake City. Wrong.
Salt Lake City is sinful as
hell. We should not put it in Salt Lake City. That's my first point. Do not put a Major League Baseball team in Salt Lake City. Oh, so where should you put it? Utah County. Put it in Utah County. That's the first thing I'm going to say. The next major league team needs to be in Utah County. Utah County is a superior county to Salt Lake County. I will take no counter arguments on that fact. That's my first thing. Second, I guarantee you the name of the team is the Utah Pioneers. I guarantee you. I don't think any of us even have a say about it. I think that's over.
What are you talking about?
We don't have a say.
What are you talking about? Nobody has a say.
We don't have a say. I can already see it. There's going to be like a P. It'll be blue. Brigham Young will be like the – he'll be running around the field in the seventh inning. That's done.
I don't.
The mascot's like a woman with a bonnet on pulling a handcart.
There's
like a dead husband. That's what it's going to be. I don't know what to tell you. I wish we had a say in the name. I don't love that.
There's like crops infesting a field and like sad people. We don't have a say in what the mascot is.
There's crickets everywhere.
That would be sweet if on the sidelines they just reenact scenes from Pioneer Past. They're like, oh, that's you'll notice all those gravestones over there. That's a full family. They died crossing and they just were buried and then left behind.
You see those people eating other people? That's the Donner Party.
Quick seventh inning stretch Donner Party reenactment.
This is the Donner Party. They got so hungry they ate each other.
You could do a lot of cool alternate logos. It's funny, I'm already making up alternate logos after saying you can't do that. But they would have no pass, so we can do all sorts of alternate logos. You could do like a cut off arm, like a bloody arm that somebody's just like eating, you know, like a drumstick. That's a good logo for a Pioneer team.
My only thing that I'm passionate about is, one, we do need a Major League Baseball team. That would be unbelievable. There is nothing better than sitting in a stadium watching baseball. There's nothing better than that. Or there's nothing. Oh, what? Oh, playing guitar. Screw you. We saw you play. There's no way it's better. Now, what we would have a say on is where it goes. And it needs to go in Utah County. I will be so passionate about that.
Look, if this ever gets put on the table, I'm with you, you know?
It needs to be in Utah County.
Well, okay, you can't just say Utah County, though. You got to hone that in a little bit more. You're trying to do the, look, I don't want to play favorites. I'm just going to say the
Provo,
county as a
Provo
whole.
Orem.
Provo Orem area.
Yeah, Provo Orem area. If you combine, here's the thing that Salt Lake City people don't understand. If you combine Provo and Orem, that's a bigger city than Salt Lake City. Thank you very much.
Why don't they understand that?
Why don't they? I don't know. They don't understand math. They don't do math. It's not my fault Salt Lake City doesn't know. You heard Kimball on him? Kimball, President Kimball?
Oh, yeah. I didn't know you were
Heber C.
Was that part of the prophecy that was in the Daily
Heber
Herald?
Heber C.
And Salt Lake City will be
did
filled
not
with
like Salt Lake City. And we need to listen to his words. He did not call out Utah County. He said, when there's a Major League Baseball team, for sure you got to call it the Pioneers. That's done. But second, put it in Utah County. That's Heber C.
So I know you and I both grew up in Utah, and it's a popular tradition in Utah to go on these like handcart treks, you know, which I never went on one as a youth. And I wonder if you actually have been on one. Because you actually do seem like somebody who would get way into it, even as a lad, like rallying up the pioneers going, listen, we don't have to eat ourselves. This is a reenactment. We can eat these Skittles we brought. I don't know why everybody keeps acting like we got to eat one another.
So I love Trek. It's one of my favorite topics in the world. My wife went on Trek a year or two ago.
Is it just referred to as Trek?
Yeah. And she's like, hey, Clint, there's this week-long thing we're doing. She calls me by my name. She's like, hey, Clint, I'm going to go on Trek. I want you to come with me. It's going to be an entire week. We're going to be in the middle of nowhere in Wyoming. It's going to be sweet. And she's like, by the way, I've picked out this sweet bonnet that I'm going to wear.
By the way, you're wearing like a flannel shirt tucked into some dungarees.
And I'm like, nah, that sounds no. But what? I just said no.
Brooke, no.
And then she calls. So she goes and they take like a bus. Kind of like the fun bus for Wendover, but they take you the bus all the way up to the
bingo! Some trousered guy gets himself an extra pack of Skittles.
So she takes this bus up, and then they get out, and then they're in a field, right? And she immediately calls me. First of all, she has service. She just immediately calls me, and she's like, this, can you come get me? I'm all, you're 9 hours away. You're 9 hours away, and I told you not to do this. Yeah. And then she tells me the story. She ends up staying. She's like, no, I'll stay, blah, 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 right? Because I'm not, I would have went and got her. Okay, I'm not in. Let me be clear.
I drive to the ends of the earth if somebody in my family was in trouble.
I'm not
Every time I look at my hydro flask, I know if they're in trouble, I'll be there.
So she's like, ah, I'll stay. I'll stick it out, right? And then she tells me what they do. And part of the trek is they have the women pull the hand carts up a huge mountain, like a steep, rocky mountain, as the men watch because the men are pretending to be dead. And the men...
All right, so where are the men? They're on the... They go up the hill?
No, the men
are
on the sides of the mountain watching.
So they go to the side of the mountain. All the women stay...
They're like lined up on like the path. The men are.
So they're fake dead, but they're watching. So they're not faking very well, in my opinion. But no. Whatever.
So they're fake dead. And they're lined up, going up the mountain, right?
Okay.
They're like, ooh, this is gonna be scintillating. And the women. This is what they do. Nobody get mad at me. I'm just reporting the fact.
Who would be getting mad at you for this? I don't even understand who you're talking
Listen,
to.
Listen, don't get mad at me.
There's somebody at home right now. That Clint's gonna get a piece of my mind.
So the women get these handcarts filled with, you know,
treats.
I
mean, what else would be in there? I don't know.
Water,
what they would...
Skittles.
It's like all the things to survive that you wouldn't have back in the day, but whatever.
So they're pushing up and it's way hard, like impossible.
Yeah, it sounds pretty
and
hard.
The men are on the side of the mountain.
That's how they play dead?
No, they're crying.
Oh, I thought that was like their dying gasp.
No, the men are crying.
Come save me. And they got to choose between pulling the hand.
The men are crying
them.
Because... I don't know why the men are crying, but the men are crying because they're like, this is hard.
So are the men...
This is hard for these people to bring this up the mountain.
Are the men crying of their own free will, or they're crying as part of this elaborate play, essentially? Which is that? I don't know why they're crying.
Hmm.
See, that's a good question, Chris. I don't know.
Hmm. Let's get somebody on. And then after that's over, like they don't get help. Nobody helps. They have to like pull the cart all the way up, and if you don't, you're dead. Like, really?
They put you down. Put them down.
But then this whole thing ends. The bishop or leader or whoever's in charge comes up and says, hey, everybody gather around.
The paw.
They're like, hey, everybody gather around. They do this. You see how I'm doing this with my hands? They're like, hey, everybody gather around. And so everybody gets around. They're like, take a knee. Everybody takes a knee. He's like, half of you are dead. And he does this. And he says, everybody from this line here, you're dead. You all are alive.
They're dead again?
Yeah. There's a lot of playing dead. Listen, nobody get mad at me. I didn't come up with this. I'm just reporting the news.
My understanding so far is you travel 9 hours to Wyoming in the middle of nowhere, and some dude is like, you guys are dead. And you're all, why did I come? I want to just explore the countryside, walk around, have a good time.
And then the dead people have to like be at like a certain area in the field, kind of like at the end of the field.
Mm-hmm.
And then the alive people are like, they're going about their business.
Okay.
And then the alive people will cross over into the spirit world or heaven or something like that.
Okay.
And then they reunite with their loved ones who were dead.
Okay. That one I understand more than the handcart one.
And here's what's fascinating. I wasn't there.
Why?
So,
why is that fascinating? I hear the whole thing. I'm like, oh, I understand that
you
one.
What's fascinating?
But where were you?
So Brooke is...
So she reunited with a fake person.
Brooke is there, and she's like...
Oh, she had...
She gets to, like, just this line.
She walks across. What's there? Hydro flask. She's like, I knew he'd send something in his stead. As a casual reminder of my love for you, I bestow this hydro flask to you.
That's way off topic from Major League Baseball coming to Utah, but the name we have no control over. It will be called the Pioneers. I have no doubt about that. The only thing we have control over is where it'll be, and it needs to be in Utah County.
I don't think that's off topic because I think that's the best possible idea for a seventh inning stretch behavior, which is the PA announcer calls all the women in the crowd down to the field, loads them up with heavy, heavy hand carts. Filled with all the concessions in the entire stadium, and says, all you men in the crowd, play dead and cry. All you women, pull the concessions up to the top of this stadium by the time the eighth inning hits. And if you don't, we put your ass down. And that's how our baseball team will function. It's just a good old time, dude.
That's the show, the Utah Pioneers coming to Utah County. Signing off for Chris Rall, Kelly Jensen, and Weston Tanner. My name is Clint Betts, and this has been another episode of The Beehive.